Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello and welcome to the Driving More show this evening. Yes, we've got Super Rugby. Well, we haven't quite got Super Rugby action. Super Rugby action is about to kick off. We've got Six Nations action and we've got a whole host of little news items that I think we should cover off on as well. And you know what? We might talk about cards because they may have had some influence on the games at the weekend. Joining me to go through all of that is regular, co-host Stephen Harris. How are you doing, sir?
Very good. Thank you, Paul. And good evening to all the listeners and watchers there tuning into the TDM. And it's always a privilege and a pleasure to be on the show. Hopefully we might get Shane join us this evening. Some of those images coming through look like he was stuck on the moon.
Yeah, hopefully Shane can join us. Unfortunately, yeah, his connection wasn't great. So hopefully we will have him joining us. Now, folks, Super Rugby kicks off this coming weekend with Super Rugby AU. They have two games on Friday night, I think it is. Is it Friday night or Saturday night? I've gone blank now. Two games on Friday night, I'm pretty sure. But we'll go through those games. What that does mean, though, is that New Zealand Sport Radio is going to start cranking up its Super Rugby coverage because we will be looking at adding in a preview show on Thursday evening. So we'll preview the games that are coming up over the weekend. A review show of all the games on a Sunday evening, just like we did last season with those two, as well as having the Driving More show here on a Tuesday evening every week. To our chat show, which is where all the hot topics in rugby. Also, we'll be looking at doing something we used to do a few seasons back, which was doing post-game reactions. So jumping on straight after the final whistle for a chat for like 15, 20 minutes, well, sometimes for an hour or two, depending on how long we felt like talking as well. So we won't be doing those for every single game, folks, but we'll try and we'll start putting them in for some of the games and we'll see how we go scheduling with everybody's availability during the season. And good evening, Simon Hughes, as always, keeping us up to keeps us in line with our facts there. And yes, the Super Rugby AU matches are on Friday.
Gonna be a big Friday night, isn't it, Paul? That first game kicks off at 9:45 from Suncorp Stadium. The Reds versus a team that we've been sort of touting a wee bit. The Reds taking on the team that could struggle, the Waratahs. And of course, if you've got enough energy in the tank, that's here in Aotearoa, you can stay up until 5 to 12 for the kickoff between the Western Force and the Brumbies. But obviously, those are local times. Australia would probably be a little bit earlier, I would say.
Well, 2 hours earlier, to be precise, if you're on the East Coast. Post-match reactions to those ones at 2 o'clock in the morning could be a bit tough. Hence why we're not necessarily going to be doing all of them, folks. COVID permitting, this weekend, I'm hoping to get to the... I've gone blank. The jet sprint racing just south of Auckland in behind the drag speedway there at
Maramara.
Thank you. Maramara. That's right. So that's what I'm. A 2 o'clock finish, and then getting up early to get over there for the jet sprints for a long day, and then on Sunday trying to get to the women's one day game in Hamilton could all be a bit much for me. So, but hey, we will do our best, won't we, Stephen?
We will.
So let's kick off with some news, actually, before we get into the big hefty topics. In my 10, then a couple of news items. Brett Cameron has signed for Manawatu Turbos, moving up from Canterbury. Obviously, in Canterbury, I'm not quite sure who he wasn't first choice all the time, even when Richard Mwanga wasn't available. So, a good move for Brett, or the end of his or the declining of what was a promising career?
Oh, listen, Paul. I think this is a shift is virtually as good as a break, as they say, and I think it's a great pickup for the Manawatu Turbos. They're obviously looking around post Otere Black. You know that they struggled a little bit without Otere Black in 2020, and of course for Brett Cameron, I think this is a good change for him. He's lived in the shadow of some very, very good first fives that have turned out for Canterbury over the years, and I suppose the writing was on the wall when there were times that he was behind even Fergus Burke, the New Zealand under 20 first five at Canterbury, and I don't think it really gave him a real opportunity to develop his game, because he is a good footballer. He first came to attention, good grief, back around about 2016, 2017 at the National Under 19 tournament, and he looked a really promising player back then. But that's 5 years on, hasn't really kicked on, shall we say. But we're talking about a guy who is a former All Black, or has played for the All Blacks at least on that the All Black two split teams that went up to Tokyo a few years ago, Paul. So I think it's a great opportunity for him to go and cement his place in the Manawatu Turbos, and more importantly, develop the game and basically own it. So it'll be interesting to see how he plays out. Of course, the downside is he's joining a Manawatu team that did struggle in 2020, but just looking at their squad across the paper, looks reasonably strong if they can keep some of their key players on board. And I'm talking about players like Nehi Milne-Scudder, and of course Nani Laumalpi is very good, and of course Jamie Booth is huge for them. But they have got a very good forward pack built around guys like the boy JT Howden, who looked really good, the blindside flanker from Manawatu. And they're a plucky side. Only one way for them to go, Peter Russell and the Manawatu Turbos, and that's up, Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. They do need to. They are a team that has struggled over the last few seasons. Look, they've had a very decent back line at times. When you're talking about, as you say, I've gone blank as the number nine. You said they had. I've gone Jamie Booth.
Jamie Booth. Yeah.
You had Lamapi. Then you had one of the Highlanders. I think Thompson was there, wasn't he, as an outside centre. You had Nehi Milne-Scudder. You had a really strong back line, but getting the ball and getting the results that they needed down there. I mean, I've been to Manawatu game once to go see the old bucket heads. I do have my own green bucket that I got for that day. I do wish them well. You say anyways up for them. That was supposed to be a short news item. I'm going to keep moving this through these, otherwise we'll spend the whole evening talking about Japanese Rugby Union has drug tested all players and all new players after a player got some caught doing, I think it was cannabis last year, which caused that team to pull out of the entire season. Zero positive tests so far. I did semi-jokingly put on Facebook that, hey, how many days warning did they give the players to clean up? you got to say, yeah, that's it's very strict over there the way they do that. So if you can head over to Japan, no recreational drugs, never mind performance enhancing drugs for that one. And then one that's the Gallagher Premiership have announced there'd be no relegation last year. Initially, it looked like they were going to try and push for it, and B team was going to push back and say no, the TV rights person people. because they think the jeopardy of relegation is important. But the RFU has now announced that it won't be, so it looks like the Gallagher Premiership have got their way. But it's not a permanent thing. It is just for 1 year initially, which means there'll be 13 teams next season, so one team will get promoted. Obviously, everyone is expecting that to be Saracens. But it'll be interesting to see if Ealing Trailfinders can upset things there. It would be amusing if they got themselves into the promotion position. And Saracens, even with 13 teams, then were excluded.
Paul, that'll be a relief to the two teams that are down the bottom at the moment, Gloucester and Worcester, not travelling the greatest at the moment, but a much improved effort from Leicester this year, although they are still sitting in ninth place. And, of course, Bristol, still looking the team to beat, but Exeter, I still think they're the team to beat, especially when they get their England players back. Bristol, I know they probably suffered a couple of injuries as well. I know in the game just played on the weekend where they managed to get across the wash. And I'm just looking at that team that they actually beat the weekend. That was, in fact, that was Gloucester that they beat in a 1-point game. But they had a serious injury to Nathan Hughes during that contest. But they got the win at the end. A much improved performance from Gloucester. But yep, Bristol and Exeter leading the way in the Premiership.
It's new territory for Exeter Chiefs there with their winning the double last season, the Premiership and also the European Champions Cup. The first time they've won the European Champions Cup, only their second Premiership title. So to go in as the main, the big dogs is a different mentality for them. They've started well, had a bit of a hiccup, but I think that's part of the learning process of being that top dog, because obviously Saracens have been in that position for so long they've been aspiring rather than what's that I'm looking for? Rather sort of holding it and knowing it's theirs, which is interesting. So yeah, it's good. We'll see how they cope with that different mentality that they require, which is good to see. Realistically, you're right, Simon, that only Saracens and Trailfinders are realistic people who can go up and stay up. We've seen teams yo-yo quite a lot. So to me,
I've got to say, Ealing Trailfinders, wow. I'll have to Google them, Paul.
Oh, they've got themselves some, they're another London-based team that's got some rich backers buying players in, particularly some American internationals have been through there recently, which is kind of interesting. So our American watchers might actually know more about the team, more about that team than most other people in the world. Interestingly enough. Any other news items before we move on to the Super Rugby?
No, not all. It's just a shame. It's just a shame watching the Premiership, obviously. Still no crowds, as we'll cover off in the Six Nations Championship. Yeah, that big one, which almost went off the tip of my mind. That's probably just the disappointing, just not having crowds. But it is what it is.
Yep, it is what it is. We'll talk about that later. But it's been interesting seeing the difference. I guess different TV companies doing crowd noises, because I found the Ireland France one to be particularly awful at the weekend. But some of the other simulators crowd noises have been pretty good. But that one really jarred with the empty seats in the play for me. But there you go. So Super Rugby then. We've had a couple of New Zealand warm-ups. We have the game of three halves down in the Upper Hutt. Which sounds a bit strange, doesn't it? Down in Upper Hutt. As the Chiefs, Blues and Hurricanes played each other. And then in the South Island, the Hurricanes and the Crusaders had a game. Interestingly enough, the Highlanders scoring all the points in the first half and the Crusaders all the points in the second half in that one. So clearly playing on the side of the mountain. Definite
They must have been playing up the mountain in one half and then turned around, and Crusaders were playing downhill in the second half. regardless of a pre-season game, very, very random, absolutely random. Can only think that whatever injections or changes were made at halftime obviously suited the Crusaders, and vice versa. For the first half is Nocturnal Rites as Highlanders. First half is all we need to know. Well, I'd hate to put this one on you, Nocturnal Rites, but they weren't playing for any points. But hey, you take every win, I guess.
Yep, no, absolutely. And look, these are only preseason games. Look, that's nice. Everybody is everyone's playing entirely different teams in each half. It's nothing. I don't think there's really that much we can read into it ahead of the real games, to be honest with you. Even if the Blues did lose both their halves.
Yeah, I suppose the only real concern was for the Crusaders another injuries. I see Ollie Jaeger went down with what looked like a serious injury. It's also been confirmed that Braden Ennoi is pretty much out for the entire Super Rugby season. So I'm just wondering, does that mean that Rennie Ranger stays with the actual squad?
No, I think Josh Mackay was Ennoi's full-time injury replacement for the season, and that Ranger's in there for one of the wingers that's injured.
Manasa Matiali, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, but really unfortunate for him, but Matiali seems to be constantly injured, unfortunately. But yeah, so I think Rennie Ranger's there for Matiali, and if Matiali doesn't recover, then you'd expect Ranger to stick around. But I think if Matiali recovers, then Ranger will be kicking his heels on the beach somewhere, or hunting more likely.
And of course, very costly for the Highlanders as well. They also picked up a couple of injuries as well. I think Aidan Johnson, who's been out anyway with injuries, ruled out for the season, and I think Jamie Ainsley, the boy that came over from the Melbourne Rebels, out for the Super Rugby season as well. Paul, sorry, I'm normally a bit onto it when it comes to getting this pre-information, but I'll check on that as the show goes along.
You're more onto it than I am, because I've missed all of that, all the injury news, to be honest with you. Unfortunately, my daughters I've been having quick phone calls about to go and look after my daughters because they're not being well and things. So, but hey, we'll catch up on all of that kind of stuff. Moving on then, and let's have a look at the squads for the teams. Now, what we're going to do here is we are going to have a look at the ages and the caps for each of the teams. And we'll just zoom in on that so we can see each team. Starting off, thank you to Rugby Fixation, who has provided these stats and allowed me to use them on the show. Sorry, they're a little bit blurry, folks. It's me zooming in. That's my fault, not his. But we look at the Hurricanes then. A whole bunch of Super Rugby caps, but not many international caps. You can see sort of certain players like Coles with lots, Sevilla with lots, and there's a whole bunch of zeros in there, isn't there? So quite a lot of players there who don't have any international experience. 25, averaging nearly 50 Super Rugby caps each. I think that's all 46. That's a much more experienced squad than I think we were expecting, or that you kind of think of as the Hurricanes, and it's also a very settled pack as well.
Oh, very, very much so, Paul. And listen, they have guys who've been around for guys who have been into their third season. Of course, Dane Coles is the obvious, who sticks out with that 117. In caps and 74 international caps, and whilst they are a little bit short on international experience, obviously Ari Savia with his 50 caps also stands out. They have got some really, really good performers that have done well at minor team cup level, and I'm looking forward to, say, for example, a player like Isaiah Walker Liawere really exploding this year. He's only 23 years old. He's had 24 caps, which almost equates to a couple of seasons, doesn't it, Paul? So, you know, he's absolutely ready to fire, and we know what sort of firepower that they've got in that back line as well. They don't lack for pace and power on the outside. And Rayasi, you look at his super caps. He's only played six, but hey, expect him to well and truly double that by the end of the Super Rugby season. I think he's set to explode as well.
Yeah, not so much as where is Gareth Evans. Obviously, Rugby Fixation decided that Gareth Evans doesn't make the starting 23, the match day 23, so that's why he's not there. But yeah, he's still in there. But yeah, interesting. Yeah, the Super Rugby experience should see them well. And I think the Hurricanes are going to go better than a lot of people expect this season. You say not big name sort of signings and things, not making any sort of big waves, but the fact that they've kept that pack together, I think it's going to stand them up well. Looking at the Highlanders there now, they've had a lot of turnover this season, as they quite often do. But still, okay, they average nearly 40 caps, Super Rugby caps. But you've got to say, 148 of those with Smith, another 100 with Ash Dixon. And then you've got players like Selby Ricketts, Amanga Jensen, Paia, who are in single figures with Super Rugby caps. It's kind of a bit of a... It's one of these ones where they've got some really experienced players and a lot of real and some really real inexperienced players in there as well. Look, not saying that those inexperienced players haven't got a lot of potential, but just not the experience. And again, not many players with international experience. Obviously, Aaron Smith being the big exception there with 97 caps. But when you've got Liam Squire as your second most experienced international player with 25, it's typical Highlanders tide. Not big names.
Yeah, a lot of experience in the forward pack, and we know that their forward pack they always punch above their weights. Obviously, those two injuries to Johnson and Jerome Ainslie, they will have to replace those guys. So it'll be interesting to see where they go or how strong their stocks are. But a good acquisition is having Liam Squire back in the squad, but he probably already adds to what's a pretty useful loose forward trio anyway, Paul, when we look through that pack.
Look, the Highlanders always have a good loose forward trio. Nocturne White's picking a few errors in the match day 23, saying Josh Dixon will start. Yes, you're probably right. Tomkinson. Hasn't Tomkinson gone overseas, I think? Which is why I think this might not be in there. Yes, there are... sure, they're not the... Perhaps not the exact number, but it gives us a taste, a feel as to what the squad's going to be like. They always have very good looses. The problem is that they might have players like Frizzell having to play in the locks because of that. I think there's a lack of locks globally at the moment, while a lot of sixes will be playing in there. But that harrying style of play is going to be there. Sorry, yep. So Tomkinson is still there. Thompson, I think, is left then, which is why I'm getting myself mixed up. I always do with those players.
Paul, I was about to say, I'm missing Folau Fakatava on that list as well, unless I need another set of glasses. But
But Kane Hamilton was quite often picked ahead of him, so I can understand why.
Yeah, so
Kane Hamilton was 23,
which is really bizarre. I mean, so he had an outstanding Water 10 Cup season 2020 for the Magpies. Boy, he looks like he's ready to explode. So, is he going to be the understudy to Aaron Smith?
You'd hope so. You definitely hope so.
Yeah.
Moving on, then, looking at the Blues. So we had the Highlanders at 38, the Blues with 41. So actually slightly higher on the Super Rugby cap side of things. But again, not much international experience in that in that Blues squad. Tuangafasi and Patrick Tupulotu and Rico Ioane out there with 37. And you think Rico Ioane burst on the scenes only, what, we're talking 4 years ago now, and he's already up to 37 caps. That's pretty impressive. Look, a team that pushed really well last year, I think a team that a lot of people are expecting quite a lot from, even if Beauden Barrett isn't available.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that, Paul. But, you know, you look through those numbers, there's some guys in there that have had, you know, the likes of Ofatoa, Fussy, Patrick Tuipulotu, of course, Akira Ioane. You know, these are guys that have had four to five seasons with the Blues. So there is an expectation that they improve on what they did last year. So you'd expect with this squad, less the likes of Beauden Barrett. But, you know, they still bring in a couple of exciting youngsters, especially in the back line. And they, in terms of Zane Sullivan, he'll offer, you know, I think he'll offer a really good fullback option for this Blue side. And of course, we know what Caleb Clark brought to the table at international level. So plenty of power and pace out wide. It's really just a case of this Blue side stepping up, Paul. There's no real changes from last year's squad. Of course, they Beauden Barrett, like you say, that the most obvious one. I mean, so they're quite strong through halfback. There'll be a good battle for that number nine spot.
Okay, sorry, folks. We had some technical issues with there where my computer decided to shut down in the middle of the show. I will just try and find that picture that we were using, because I think we still have the Crusaders and the Chiefs to go through. Stephen, yeah, I think we were talking, or I kind of left you talking about the Blues, but I think we can move on.
Oh, listen, I was just saying, yeah, they've got a lot of depth. Certainly, there's a lot of Super Rugby experience in this Blues squad. If you look across off the whole list, you know, there's only really, from what I can see, maybe one, two, maybe three single digit numbers in that, you know, guys who have played under 10 caps in this in this Blues outfit. So yeah, talent for Africa. Probably a little bit of a concern for the coaches is the slight little change in rules. I know the Blues bulked up on props, a lot of quality in terms of the props that they've got, but I think the coaching staff will be a little bit frustrated that there is now the goal line dropout, so no opportunity to put pressure on in an attacking or defensive situation, Paul.
Yeah, a little less on that. Well, yeah, less scrums, but we'll talk about those after this. Moving on then to the Crusaders, and what can we say? Well, nearly average of 60 Super Rugby caps in that starting 15, 22 international caps. So again, a side stacked with experience here in this one. Some question marks around some of the selections that he's made, perhaps in that starting 15, putting Havili at 12 and Franganuku and not playing bridge. There's very settled side. A couple of injuries to players, but on the whole, Crusaders must go back into this as favourites, looking for a four-peat.
Yeah, very much so. That's going to be the challenge for Scott Robertson and his coaching staff, is to keep this team mentally up there. And I reckon they play with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, this Crusaders side. And listen, they're stacked, like you say, they're stacked with experience. They've got one heck of a leader in Sam Whitelock, 150 super caps, an amazing career. I'm not too sure if he's signed through to 2023, whether he'll quite eclipse the big fella who played at Lucid Prop for the Crusaders. Help me out here, Paul. My memory's gone blank.
I was just lining up the laws. What you kind of said there, but yeah. So Whitelock, 150 caps, 122 international caps. Clearly, the most experienced guy there.
Yeah.
But look, I mean, again, we look at that that pack. You know, Moody, Taylor, Whitelock, Barrett. We're looking at All Blacks all the way through there. And Grace, Christie, Douglas, with Blackadder off the bench. Quinn and Strange also come off the bench. Look, depth and quality. All the way through there. So yeah, look, it's a wonderful side. And Scott Robinson, someone saying he needs to go overseas to build up his resume. I don't know. I think picking up Super Rugby titles every year looks pretty good on the old CV as well.
It looks pretty impressive because each year he does lose players overseas, and as you know, they lose some quality players. But the exciting thing for the Crusaders is Will Jordan, man. A little bit like what we were talking about for Lau Fakatava. He's ready to explode. So does he take that fullback position off David Harvey, or do they play him permanently on the wing? But yeah, just so much cover with George Bridge and Sevu Reese and Fire Nuku. Wow, man, the firepower. And then you've also got Josh McCry, who obviously there's centre cover at the minute. Man, they have got a lot of options. I'll probably see somebody like Harvey playing more in the midfield this year, to be brutally honest, Paul. Maybe with teaming up with Jack Goodhue. Jack Goodhue might get pushed out to centre and Harvey into second five.
We see Harvey as being the 21 jersey, the 22 jersey as the second fly half. Because he's played that before when Richard Mwang has gone off. So he could be, he could be used in that role. A player who, he's only 26, but you kind of say, scratching your head as to why hasn't he gone overseas and got the big money? Because he is a class act, and in any other country would be knocking on 40-odd, 50-odd caps internationally, never mind. But those four there, I mean, he can't go overseas and get to and play for anybody else, I guess, which is a... he's still holding out for more All Blacks recognition, I guess.
Yeah. One area where they could be vulnerable if they do have injuries, they had the luxury of having Andrew Makalai as a backup hooker to Cody Taylor last year. Now, if Taylor gets injured, I don't see there's not a hooker in there that really, really stands out to me. So that could be a concern from them. But I'll tell you what, they just know how to bring these younger players in, a couple of players that are not on this particular list here. Anton Signer, the number 7 from Tasman, very, very good, very, very good footballer, one to watch out for. Fergus Burke as well, we know is a quality first five that kept Brett Cameron out of the side, and they've brought in a young prop as well. His name escapes me, but he's listed as very, very, very promising, played for Canterbury last year. So, boy, they just seem to get the recipe right, don't they, Paul?
Oh, absolutely. And it helps that they, apart from Rennie Rangeley, all their players have come through the Crusaders or the Tasman setup. So they've all come, Canterbury or Tasman setup, all through Crusaders Academy. So they all play. They all know what's expected when they get there. They're not having to teach them that from there. Looking at the Chiefs then, a side that did really well in Super Rugby and then totally underperformed in Super Rugby Aotearoa last year. It'll be interesting to see how they go and basically how they manage to fit all of their players in is another part of this as well. Looking at the 23 that's been selected there, 50... an average of 50 Super Rugby caps in the starting lineup, and quite a few international players there. So international caps sprinkled around, even some on the bench as well. The obvious area of that you would say it could be an issue is that is the locks. And I do have
Here we are at the Chiefs event in Pyra, and I'm feeling very small because, big boy in with me, Topu Vai'i. Look, 12 months ago, you'd have been doing pre-season with your club, I guess. And here you are now, an All Black, Taranaki player, Chiefs player. Yeah. Has it all sunk in yet that you, when people say, "Hey, oh, hi, Tupu Vaiea, the All Black"?
Yeah, it's all sunk in now. Slowly getting used to it. But no, I'm just pretty much a normal Chris and just myself, I guess. Yeah.
It's well, yourself, but yeah, but also one of the best locks in the country. So how are you enjoying a full proper pre-season at super level now? Obviously, with the intensity of it up from club rugby.
It's was pretty much my first week back with the team. Yeah, the training's going pretty well at the moment. The boys are working hard, and yeah, I'm pretty excited to be a full-time Chiefs player. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And also new set of coaches as well. I mean, how difficult is that when you've had your club coaches, then you had your own 20 coaches. Obviously with Clayton coming in this year, you had Gats last year. You obviously up in the All Blacks. How easy is it switching between all those different coaching teams?
I guess it's pretty good. Oh, it's pretty easy as well. You know, you got your club coaches that know their stuff, and then you got the super coaches that know their stuff as well. So I'm just trying to get my head around that, and yeah, slowly learning new things. And I think Clett is doing a good job at the moment with the boys. And yeah,
cool. Now, obviously, you got yourself, Arkoi, and now actually the senior locks in the looking at the locking. You guys at 21 are the head locks with the 220 year olds with you. I think it's. Yeah, it's a pretty youthful, I mean, lots of promise and potential there, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess for the senior locks, we're only 21, but it was good for me. I got to get under Sam Warlock's wing and Patrick Tupolot as well, and just learn off them, and I'm pretty sure I'll come back and share my knowledge of the rest of the locks. Yeah.
So are you the line-out caller, or are you handing that responsibility on to someone else?
Yeah, I'll say later on in the long run, I'll be a line-out caller, but at the moment, I'm just trying to pick up where the boys are at the moment. So yeah,
cool. Well, good luck, and it's really exciting year ahead of you. Yeah. As you say, first full season as fully professional. We're really looking forward to following you, and good luck for the season.
Yeah, cheers for that.
Great,
thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
So there you go. A quick chat with the senior lock for the Chiefs.
Gee, Paul, I thought you might have needed a ladder there. He's listed at 6'6", 118 kgs, and frighteningly 21 years old. But boy, I thought he actually sounded really mature for his age, mate.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's he obviously has had a bit of a chuckle there when I mentioned that he and Arkoi both of them at 21 or 20 and 21 were the two senior locks at the Chiefs. Boy, do they need Retallick back now as soon as possible. But that's obviously not going to happen this year. Look, there's lots of experience around the side, but not in that position. And also perhaps not in the 10 jersey either. Trask and Gatland, both, I mean, Trask, lots of potential again, but I was playing at 15 last year, but a lot at 15 in the Formida 10 as well. With the Terry Black playing mainly at 10 for Bay of Plenty. Who is going to be in that 10 jersey for the Chiefs there? Obviously, Trask has got Clayton McMillan, his Bay of Plenty coach, is now the Chiefs coach, so he'll know him. But, I think at locks and at number 10, the Chiefs have got potential, but not proof so far.
Yeah, don't disagree with that at all. Still a strong squad. Yeah, they got that obvious. You could call it a weakness, but you know what? A couple of 21-year-old locks, they will go out and they will give it 100%. No question. And they're both physical. They're both. What I do like about both Tupavai and also Arkoi is just their work rate and their physicality. They will offer a lot of physicality through that middle row, and they're still strong in the loose forwards as well. The likes of Jacobson and co, they will go, they'll give it 100. I think they'll be better than where they were last year. Let's not forget, it was their very first game of the season. They kicked off with a 1-point loss to the Highlanders, I think it was, in Super Rugby Aotearoa 2020. And this year they kick off on Friday the 3rd of March, and ironically, they play the Highlanders again. So a real good opportunity to get off for them to a perfect start, Paul.
Now, so in the chat there, Vitalik is still in the top league. Nocturnal Right saying that he'd think he doesn't take one's place with Brogan anymore. Look, Vitalik's taking the sabbatical that he was allowed to take. And he'll be back in time for the next season and the Rugby World Cup. He's got another 2 years of Super Rugby ahead of him. Just like Bowden Barrett, just like TJ Perenara, all these guys have are using their sabbaticals that they're allowed to have. So yeah, look, the Chiefs. I think they'll start off better, and we'll see much more of the Super Rugby, not the Super Rugby Aotearoa side, from this Chiefs team. Just a few interesting question marks. I want to see Xavier Rowe get a chance. Obviously, we heard from him on the show last week with that interview. So, good. So that's basically the Super Rugby squads. We should probably have a quick chat about the new laws then. So for Super Rugby Aotearoa, two new laws, really, goal line dropouts. So when an attacking player carrying the ball is held up in the in-goal or knocks the ball on in the in-goal, play restarts with a goal line dropout. When a kick goes into the in-goal area and is grounded or otherwise made dead by the defending team, play restarts with a goal line dropout, excluding where it would have gone to a 22 before. So essentially, the 5 metre scrum has been removed from the game, Stephen.
Very much so. So if you've loaded your squad with a whole lot of props, you'll probably be feeling a bit angst about it. In the case of the Blues, really interesting. Like if you're running back to feel the ball, where you have that option of just obviously touching it down, going for the drop kick, or maybe the opportunity to try and run it out from the goal line and put it to, at least put it to touch and go to the next set piece. Yeah, it's an interesting one, but to me, once again, the advantage still, if you're held up over the line, the advantage in a way still is handed to the attacking team. So that's probably a good thing, but boy, it's right out of the rugby league playbook, isn't it?
It is. I mean, look, I mean, the kind of thing you're talking about though is we'll normally go back to a 22, where you say you're running back and have the opportunity to think about what to do. Most of the time, when it's going to be a 5 metre scrum, or what would have been a 5 metre scrum, and therefore we're going to have the dropout. I think we're going to see that people don't have that option. So Nocturnal, no, I don't think this is a hanging the wings, hanging back in defence option like the 22-50, 50-22 that we have in Super Rugby AU. I think it's around so much around that. This is just purely to speed the game up. In fact, you can just lose 3 or 4 minutes with reset scrums at 5 meters out.
Just a quick question. Could you, if players have got to stand, do players have to stand 10 meters, defenders have to stand 10 meters back, 5 meters back? So there's actually nothing from stopping you from taking a little drop kick. It would be heck of a dangerous little drop.
It has to go 5 meters. The kick has to go 5 meters.
The kick has to go 5 meters. Well, I'll tell you what. I see opportunities. I really do. You can't have everybody standing on that 5 meter line. So it's really important. I think one of the important things is going to be obviously the player who's taking the drop kick. You'd certainly want the player with your biggest drop kick. But if there's an opportunity, if you're chasing the game, there's definitely an opportunity to win the ball back, because it's only 5 meters, Paul.
It is, yep. Sort of onside kick in the kind of the old NFL kind of parlance. When we're talking about a player welfare point of view, which we will get onto, and we'll talk about it next week. But this idea of, basically your big players catching a goal line dropout and having a free 10 or 20 meter run up before crashing into somebody is not necessarily a good idea. So this one actually perhaps is making player welfare less safe rather than more safe by adding in this situation where it's one of the few situations where a big ball carrier where you can have multiple of them, your second rowers. And occasionally you'll see a number eight hanging back to do a kick return. But this could lead to some big collisions.
Well, more importantly, they've got plenty of time to wind up, haven't they, Paul? Really, and they're gonna commit the defenders. But you know, all your rugby basics come into play. Your cleaners are still gonna have to get to that guy quick enough because you know, once again, I think the chop tackle comes into play, chop player over. You know, you've just as a defending team, you've still got that opportunity to turn the ball over. So. Yeah, I don't think it's one of these. Don't think one of these situations. We'll just give it to the biggest guy and hope that he basically breaks through and makes as much ground as he can. So yeah, I suppose it's an interesting innovation. But like you say, player welfare could be another. You know, if you've got a small player going in to make a hit on a big guy who's winding up. Yeah, I'd hate to think of the consequences.
It just says that it has to be. Taken on or behind the defending team's goal line. So Jordan Clark asking, does it have to be under the posts? From what I can read, no, I don't think it has to be under the posts. So, there are going to be some interesting options there, potentially, of teams. As you say, let's see what innovations we can come up with. My money is on Tony Brown's Highlanders, coming up with having the most interesting ones because he tends to be that kind of coach.
Just out of interest, Paul, I know one of the pre-games was televised. I think the Crusaders Highlanders game was actually televised. Did they play under those rules?
Yes, by the looks of the comments in the live chat, because I've not actually seen them. I didn't actually watch that game, but yes.
Okay, it'd be interesting to actually get some feedback in terms of how that worked out.
So, yeah. And the other one is the captain's referral, which is going to be an interesting one. So, let's see. There are three scenarios where we can do a referral. There's only one referral per game. For an infringement before a try is scored at any time from the last restart in play. Previously, the TMO could only go back two phases. The foul play, a captain can refer a referee to an act of foul play he thinks has been missed by the match officials. After the 75-minute mark, including any period of extra time, the captain can use his referral to challenge any referee's decision, not just those leading to a try. So it's going to be interesting to see how this goes. But that foul play one, so already the referee, the two assistants and the TMO have missed it. So the captain's going to refer it to the TMO, who says nothing's happened, to review their own decision. I can see it's going to be quite fun.
Yeah, well, fortunately, there won't be too many of them, because once you've had one, that's pretty much it, isn't it?
Yes, it is. We will have to see to see how this goes. If the captain's referral is correct, then they get to keep the referral to use again. So to encourage, to encourage. Correct referrals, not frivolous referrals, obviously, on that one. Obviously, we will still have the golden point, extra time and all that kind of stuff that we had last season, but some new ones there for Aotearoa. Super Rugby AU also have the 50-22-22-50 kicking rule as well. I guess...
Gee, next thing we'll be having players being put on report, Paul.
Well, we could get to the yes. Yeah. You and Bo want to do. Rugby union is distinct from rugby league for a couple of reasons. One, it flows rather than being a kind of reset game. And also the set piece is a big differentiator between the two games. I'm not sure that bringing the two games together is necessarily a good thing. Yeah, Jordan Clark, he says, I don't like the last 5 minutes part. It could get messy and slow. True, but there are only two referrals, unless they keep getting it right, in which case, you know what, the referee shouldn't be making that many mistakes, would be my opinion. Simon Hughes, he thinks it will refer, it will undermine the referee. I think we've been undermining referee for a number of years now, unfortunately, which is a shame. And so hopefully we will not see that. Hopefully this will tie things up. But yeah, look, unfortunately, the referee has been undermined for a number of years now. We've only really got 10 minutes or so, Stephen, and a whole stack of Six Nations stuff. But I guess the two biggest points really were a card and a no card. So we probably should talk about those. Just to keep people up to date, it's England beat Italy convincingly. Scotland beat Wales, and Wales beat Scotland, or a red card beat Scotland, as Wales are now two wins and from two red cards. Only three more cards until Wales get the Grand Slam, as has gone round on Twitter. And then France beat Ireland in a close one as well. But yeah, cards were the order of the day. We're kind of going to be discussed, weren't they? The red card for Scotland, Stephen. Personally, look, if you're going to be that late arriving at a ruck and charging in, you're asking for trouble.
Yeah. Like I say, I've actually got no issues under the rules that there are at the moment. And like I said, I don't want to push this wheelbarrow too far. Yeah, it's a red card every day of the week, and players have just got to learn.
They don't. If and this is something that Boa told us a couple of weeks ago, that the referees have been told to look out for anyone who's arriving to rucks late, and they're going to be giving that particular focus because it is so dangerous. You've got people in a stationary position being charged at from distance, and players generally, well, let's be honest, nobody binds on people unless they're trying to do a crocodile roll in a ruck. It's all just bashing other people out of the way nowadays. This whole point of having to bind people has long gone, folks. If you're not there immediately at the ruck and you're arriving late, you have got to be extremely careful. And anyone who isn't is going to get sent off. It's as simple as that. It should be a red card. It's dangerous. Players are going to be getting injured. So, look, players are going to have to learn. But yet, in that situation, we've just got to give up the ball, because if we don't, I'm going to get red carded, sent off. Am I going to lose?
Yeah, and listen, it shouldn't take away what was a really good game of rugby as well, Paul, with some really spanking tries. You know, this newcomer for Wales, Rhys Zammit, as well. Boy, looks like he's got something about it. I mean, to say his finish with the chip over the top and to beat Stuart Hogg to the touchdown, just absolutely superb. But I just thought, in terms of the much maligned coach Wayne Pivac, who we thought might be out of a job even this soon into the Six Nations. Actually, I thought there was a little bit of a masterstroke by making a couple of changes to the Welsh team, bringing Callum Sheedy on, especially more of a running first five than Dan Bigger. There didn't seem to be a lot happening at the back. He also brought on the halfback as well, Hardy. He added something, and of course, Willis Halaholo. We know we obviously know him from here in Auckland, played for the Suburbs Club, played for the Hurricanes. Willis is a very, very good stepper, and he does feed his outside backs really, really well. And boy, some good tries. And I think this boy for Wales, Rhys Zammit, I think he's probably, you could virtually put a ring around him for that British Lions tour, if that was to
whoa.
Take place.
Yep, whoa! Yep,
I reckon you put him in the team, man. He's got something about him.
I would say he gets, yeah, I would say, look, he's guaranteed himself a Welsh jersey. But to say going on the British and Irish Lions tour this early, wow, that's a big call. Okay. This is his first season.
Okay, this is Steve's big call. Remember 2 weeks ago on this same show, I said Roger Tuivasa Sheck will be playing for the Blues, and I got the whoa. Here we go. This boy is going to be in the British and Irish Lions. And I've got to give it up for the South African-born winger as well, who's just a big guy, and that's Van der Merwe, who's a favourite of Boa, who's hopefully watching the show, and I hope you're well, getting better, Boa, if you are watching the show. And boy, he's also a boy who's putting his hand up, and of course in that Scottish team in a losing performance, boy, Stuart Hogg really showing his class.
Look, if Scotland had said 15 men, they'd have won that game. It's that simple, really. Now, Jordan Clark is saying they should have the replacement after 20 minutes penalty time. Anything that reduces the penalty will just encourage more foul play. Wales coming into this game had 21 injured players. 21, folks. That's nearly an entire match day squad of injured players. This the game is so attritional at the moment. We've got to reduce the physicality somehow, while still keeping it in the game. But yeah, at the moment, too many players are getting injured. The damage to players is just way, way too high from this. I'm anti anything that reduces the penalty on players. We've got to try and discourage foul play as much as possible. The big problem is consistency of refereeing. At the end of the day, that's one thing that needs to be sorted out.
Yeah, that's pretty much said like a 75 kg hooker who put the number 2 jersey on back in the day.
Well, no, look, I mean, absolutely. Look, I was listening to the Attacking Scrum podcast. And look, yeah, basically, the last 25 years, players have gone from training twice a week, Tuesday or Thursday, to training 7 days a week to play. And the body shape and the amount of power those players have has just ballooned with that. But we haven't changed really the laws of the game in that time. We've still allowed players, whilst players are doing amazing things like jackling that didn't happen during the amateur era, putting themselves in, let's be honest, absolutely dangerous positions. George Smith is probably possibly the first guy who we can blame for starting that trend. So anyway, some good points they made there on that. So yeah, I recommend listening to the Attacking Scrum folks, the Welsh podcast there, which I enjoyed. The other card, most injuries aren't from foul play, perhaps not, but we do need to we need to change the We need to somehow fix the game so that we aren't causing quite so many injuries. Now, quite how we do that, I think that's an entire show in and of itself, folks, for that one. But the other one we need to talk about is Owen Farrell's late no-arms tackle on the scrum half in the England-Italy game. I know Boa in the chat was like, kind of like, that should be the card. This is inconsistency. I saw it and thought there wasn't really that much in that, to be honest with you. Yes, he hit him, but he pushed him over. But to my mind, it wasn't particularly late, and he didn't hit him high. Players run into each other during a game. Yes,
a little clumsy, maybe, Paul.
Maybe a little clumsy. Maybe he probably could have pulled out of it, but I think as Nocturne Wright said, did Owen do another one? I think a lot of this was the fact that Owen Farrell has a reputation, and so there's an awful lot of people out there who will follow his every move, looking for something to try and put up a clip on YouTube on Twitter, because hey, they know they're going to get a reaction for it. So I think this was more his reputation. Now, was he a gobby shite and did he lose the plot? Yes, he did in that game. And the way he was talking to the referee was wrong. The referee should have told him to shut up or go off the pitch, put bluntly. So look, I'm not saying this is not someone who's a Owen Farrell apologizer or whatever. I just don't think there was that much in this particular one. Yes,
might also be a case that he's a skipper as well, Paul. So maybe the referee's just giving him a little bit more leniency that he would normally good. Like I'd say, if it was one of the other players in the team, the referee is probably more likely to have a real crack at that particular player, knowing that Owen is the captain. Maybe.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a bit like TJ Perenara, got some. We saw him go too far talking to the umpire, to the referees when he was captain of the Hurricanes. Owen Farrell was doing the same sort of thing. The referee has already told you that the situation of something to keep going on at the referee on the way back to halfway for the next kickoff. No, all you're going to be doing at that point is upsetting the referee, right? You're not gaining yourself anything talking about them. So, yes, I understand convention allows the captain to talk to the referees. It's not law, within the laws, no one is allowed to talk to the referee, but convention allows the captain to, which is fine. But the captains have to know where that boundary is. And that boundary is asking for an explanation. And then if you get it, shutting up or pointing things out, saying, hey, ref, can you please look at this in future? That's fine. But going on after the referee's already told you his decision, not a good move, in my opinion.
And I suppose, Paul, we should just quickly, while we've got a little bit of time, I know we're probably making up for the time we were off here, should just touch on that that final game between Ireland and France. A deserved win to France at the end of the day, even though Ireland had a bit of ball, but really didn't look anywhere near as dangerous as the French did.
This is the first time that Ireland have played without Murray or Sexton since 2011. Which is kind of amazing. So it's been, we're talking about a decade where you had either had Murray or Sexton playing. It's a decade since the situation. So look, again, injuries playing its part there for Ireland. I've only seen the extended highlights this one. I haven't actually seen the full game this one. But as you say, France, more clinical, showing why they've come into this as joint. Came to the Six Nations as joint favourites, and why they're now favourites to win the whole thing, to be honest.
Yep, and a good acquisition, Sean Edwards, to their defensive setup as well. So you're kind of maybe wondering why Wales let him go. Hey, interesting comment just come up from Rich Feeman. Good to have you on board, listening into the show, Rich. Just saying that it'll be interesting to see if TJ will be talking the Japanese rest while at the NTT. The Como, it certainly will be interesting.
Yeah, that'll be. folks, if you don't already give Rich Freeman a follow, do give him a follow on Twitter. He's as well. He's the best English speaking rugby journalist about Japanese rugby. Well, I'll rephrase that.
Apart from yourself, Paul.
The best journalist covering Japanese rugby. And the fact he does it in English helps me because I can actually read it. She's good. So give Rich a follow, definitely. One of the points in here is Johnny May's try. Now, Johnny May's rugby league style try, people losing their, yes, this rugby league wing has been doing this for a while. Now, look, great skills from him, being able to dive, get himself in the air so he can't get knocked into touch and get the ball down. Brilliant. Rachel made the good point, though. If you're hurdling, you can't hurdle a tackle. So technically, this should be a penalty against England. Convention at the moment would say that would not happen. If you try doing that kind of play in the middle of the field away from the try line, it's a penalty against you. But on the try line, it's allowed currently. Whether it should or shouldn't be is up for debate. But yes, it is currently allowed in that one. And we'll see how that's. We'll see if there's any changes made, but because it's spectacular, because it creates views, my guess is that it will be allowed going forwards on that one. DuPont struggling with the basics? I don't know. I think Aaron Smith said that DuPont is the best scrum half in the world and that he's learning from him. I'd say I only saw highlights, extended highlights of the Ireland France game. I didn't see all of the game. DuPont is probably the best player in the world at the moment. Maybe he wasn't entirely 100% on form, but I think we could let him off for one game.
Paul, we have got a couple of good games to look forward to in round three. There was a question asked before, do Wales play England at home? Yes, they do. That's on the that game is coming up on the Sunday, the 28th of February. And, of course, the first game of the round is Italy at home to Ireland. And, of course, another beauty will be France versus Scotland at Stade de France in Paris.
Yeah, so this weekend is a weekend off, folks. Well, the Six Nations will be back the following week with those games. Obviously, our focus this weekend will be on Super Rugby AU on Wednesday, on Friday night with those two games there. Jordan Clark saying Ireland not gelling as a team not giving youngsters younger talent more opportunities. Yes. To me, Ireland just refuse to move forward into the next generation. And they keep players around for too long. Johnny Sexton, is he going to be playing come the next Rugby World Cup? To me, unlikely, particularly with his injury history and age. They really have had to, they really need to be giving someone else some more opportunities. But listening to some Irish podcasts, they're like, look, he's still the man. He's still the best. He is. But, and as soon as you make him captain, which is what Farrell has done, you're then basically handcuffing yourself. You have to play him whenever he's fit. Ireland, I'm concerned about going into this Rugby World Cup cycle when I should be excited about them being a team that's still growing off the back of those two defeats to the All Blacks during the last Rugby World Cup cycle.
Yeah, wasn't the New Zealand-born Joey Carberry the next heir apparent at least a couple of seasons ago, especially when he was on Ireland were under Joe Schmidt's watch. Joey Carberry looks more of a running first guy and to me Ireland looked like a team that are trying to find a style at the moment, Paul, and they haven't quite found that style. And you hit it right on the head. I don't know if Johnny Sexton is the guy to unlock that style because, man, they have got some really, really good outside backs. A couple, there's a couple that's not featured. I think there's Jacob Stockdale. Is he injured at the moment, Paul? We've also got, they've got an exciting fullback that escapes me as well.
Jordan Lama.
Jacob
Stockdale, are both out of the squad at the moment. Also, very, very good, very good players in there. So yeah, look, they've got the playing talent. They just have some problems around 9 and 10 currently. Trying to figure out who that is. The rest of the team has got depth and is in a good place if they can play the right game plan. Aaron Smith calls DuPont the best player around now. Yes, he did. On Twitter. So great. That was nice to see. Some other bits of news. South Africa announced a plan B if the Rainbow Cup doesn't happen. Let's be honest, with the way that we've got lockdowns in the UK and how the two most virulent strains have come out of the UK and South Africa recently, how they can hold the Rainbow Cup. It just can't happen. I can't see how it can happen. So they will have the tournament called the Franchise Cup between the South African teams. It's going to be interesting to see with the Eastern Province Elephants joining in. So it'll be interesting that as some sort of form of warm-up ahead of the British and Irish Lions tour that we're still hoping may happen in some kind of form, sometime, somehow, somewhere. Stephen, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. Absolutely again. Tomorrow night sees the return of the Standoff Show. We have two specials ahead of the season for the NRL. So if you're into your NRL, join us at 8 p.m. tomorrow night, where we'll be reviewing or summing up all the off, all the sort of out of season, off season action or news. Obviously, there's no action in the off season, is there? That's the whole point of an off season. You take a rest. So all the off season news, we'll give a roundup of all that this week. So do join us for that. Thursday evening, 8 p.m., we'll look at previewing the two Super Rugby AU games ahead of those games on Friday night. And obviously join us on Sunday, 8 p.m., to review those two games. That preview and review show, look, should be going for the next sort of 10 or so weeks, depending on what happens with Super Rugby Trans-Tasman. Let's all hope you're all having a fantastic time, folks. In the especially if you're in Auckland under lockdown 3, please look after yourself, stay safe. Stephen, thank you so much for being with me.
Yeah, not a problem at all, Paul. Just want to voice your last comments about staying safe. No matter where you are around the country, we've back here in Auckland, we've gone back to lockdown 3. So wherever you're viewing the show, yeah, stay safe. We'll see you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.